Welcome to Wake Up with Dr. Douglas James Cottrell, your source for helpful information, advice, and tips to live your life in a mindful way in this increasingly chaotic world. For over four decades, Dr. Douglas has been teaching people how to develop their intuition and live their lives in a conscious way. His news and views of the world tomorrow, today, are always informative and revealing. To learn more about Dr. Douglas, be sure to visit his website, douglasjamescottrell.com, where you can download self-help exercises you can do right in the comfort of your own home. And now here's your host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell.
Welcome to Wake Up. As I've done a little work in researching tonight's topic, it is a fascinating topic. I've learned a great deal where those things that I didn't quite understand about people's behavior kind of, you know, came together for me. And I was thinking of experiences and people that I met and circumstances I've been in myself. And all of a sudden, I realized, my goodness, here is someone who's an expert. Here is someone who can teach people, help women, help them become the boss of their own business with feminine energy. And some of the things that this lady has done, is absolutely astounding. From Greece, early in the morning, here is Dr. Tracy Kimball. Welcome to the show.
I should say good morning from Greece, good evening in New York, and hello everyone, and I'm super happy to be here.
You know, whenever I talk to people who are quite on the other side of the pond, I always say, so, you're in the future. We're talking to you on, Saturday, so what's it like in the future? And that's the terrific laugh.
This is an amazing concept, huh?
Yes, it's you know, main time is the fourth dimension, and in the world I live in, you know, in the ever-present moment, you know, no time, no space kind of thing. It's always a surprise. But listen, I want to get right to the talk. We have the lines are open, my friends, 718-766-4421, if you'd like to talk to Dr. Tracy, and only Dr. Tracy, tonight. When I was, as I meant off the top, when I was looking through this, narcissistic abuse, it's more prevalent in our society than, you know, I realized. I'm a mature man. I've been around for a while. And I thought, I always wondered why women who would be abused would stay with the abuser. I wondered why people would abuse their children and the children would grow up and become abusers themselves. I wondered why people would be so mean, nasty to people, and why they would seek to have dominance over others, especially in employment situations and other fields in the, you know, in human psyche or our relationships to each other. So as I was reading your webpage, which is very well put together, it came to me that you're dealing with several different facets of society, predominantly with women, I would assume, but that reaches out to other people as well. I would think other situations that just alluded to. But when somebody comes to you, when a lady comes to you, I would assume that she's broken. Narcissistic abuse is a form of psychological, emotional abuse that is characterized by manipulation, I suspect, control and exploitation of someone who has narcissistic personality. And I believe the short form for that is NPD. So when you're dealing with people, when somebody comes to you, they're probably desperate. They probably don't know where to turn, but they're able and capable to seize the moment and reach out for help. Can you walk us through how that first encounter happens or how people come to seek your help? What happens?
Well, you know, it's the first thing that I want to kind of clarify to listening audience is that I know so much about narcissistic abuse trauma and narcissism because I lived it and I survived it and I overcame the trauma of it. And so, you know, yes, I have my PhD in psychology, but I probably have a double PhD in narcissistic trauma.
The real one, right?
The one real one, yeah. The one, exactly. Wow. So, when I went in for help, and, you know, when the therapist asked me what all therapists ask me, which is, you know, why are you here? The only thing that I could say was, I said, my brain feels like mush and I feel invisible. And, you know, what type of, a diagnosis can you go with from there? And this is at a time when the subject of narcissistic abuse, what we now call narcissistic abuse trauma, was not in the conversation of psychology, or, you know, day in and day out in society. And so my journey into getting well was a long haul up what felt like a very lonely hill, and that's one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about sharing it, because you're not talking, I mean, 100% of men or women who physically abuse do have narcissism of some sort, anger disorder, rage disorder, what have you. But narcissism itself, it's running at pandemic levels in our society, and we can encounter somebody with narcissism, or allow me just to really enlighten that what we're talking about is a spectrum disorder. So it's not like pregnancy where you are or you aren't. This is something that it sits on a spectrum. So we can be dealing with people who have what are called narcissistic tendencies, all the way up to people who have NPD or antisocial personality disorder, sociopath, psychopath. And so that's what makes identifying the possible narcissist who can traumatize you so difficult, is that, you know, it's a little drop here and a little drop there. But there is a saying in recovery that it says, you know, dealing with narcissism is like having poop in your soup. And poop in your soup is never okay, meaning that the smallest drop of a narcissist is just not okay in any part of life, because it can lead to great destruction, great destructive measures.
Well, you know, when somebody's a victim of a narcissistic abuse, I'm sure they have feelings, as you've just alluded to, feelings of confusion, self-doubt, anxiety, and you're being manipulated by someone, you're being, and their behavior is to them to have power over you and to further your confusion, and then to get you, to convince you, the victim, that it's all your fault. And they have this conceit, I would, in the old days it was probably called it, somebody's conceited, but this idea of somebody who's a narcissist, they believe they're the smartest person in the room, I would suspect. They believe that they're entitled to push people around. And when I was listening to you a moment ago saying you're a pathfinder going through this jungle, I could see, my gosh, that was pretty difficult. You would go to somebody, they wouldn't have a clue what was going on, or they might dismiss it, or they might say something, this is all in your head or whatever. But as you said, your brain felt like mush. So, you know, along the way of just, I said, these people who are themselves with this disease, disorder, how do they ever accept that they're the fault, that it's their problem, or do they keep blaming everybody else?
Well, you know, narcissism, when somebody actually gets diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder, and before it hits narcissistic personality disorder, something called narcissistic tendencies, which, you know, day in and day out, some of us can flare up and respond in a very narcissistic way. And we also need healthy narcissism to keep the good in and the bad out. And that's why this can get so confusing. But somebody who has authentic narcissistic, high narcissistic tendencies on up the scale, it's a personality disorder. And the way that I like to describe it is, it's no different than dealing with somebody who has an addiction disorder. Is it treatable? Yes. But the only way that a person can get treated is if they first admit that they have a problem. And the difficulty with narcissism is that you're dealing with somebody who who, because of this false interpretation of self that they have, which is just a protective shield in front of them, that they believe that they are better than people, smarter than people, have rights that other people don't. And so for a narcissist to actually humble him or herself and say, you know, I have a problem here, it's few and far between. It's possible, but it's few and far between.
Wow. I would assume that a wife is, or somebody going to a partner and saying, you know, you have an issue. I read something. I just went on, Dr. Tracy's website and, you know, I fit the bill as a victim and you fit the bill as the abuser. So we love each other. Let's do something about it. And should that person love the partner enough that they would consider doing that? That must be a heck of an uphill battle for that person to swallow the idea that they're not perfect, that everybody else in the world doesn't owe them a living, and everybody else, meaning their spouse or their children for that matter, ought to do what they say because, you know, they're smarter, they're better. I mean, I'm sure that would come into your practice in dealing with people who would rarely perhaps say, I need some help, but would it be a couple situation? Would that be helpful? Or is it basically you, the number one person is the victim that you have to deal with? Which would be I'm asking a rhetorical question. I guess it would be the person who's in trouble and you're going to save their life.
Yeah, if I deal with the men or women, primarily I deal, I work with women, who have been traumatized by narcissistic abuse and teach them the roadmap out of it. Because, you know, the one thing I want to point out is that the advancement of the understanding of narcissism has greatly expanded over the years. You know, we're talking about something that's come on to, you know, entered into the DSM only a few short years ago with the narcissistic abuse trauma actual diagnosis of it. But that being said, as this unfolding and discovery of narcissism has luckily gone out of the shallow waters and we're more studying the condition much deeper, there are many different types of narcissists. So there's the grandiose narcissist, and that's the one that is, you know, usurps the room and, you know, always wants a spotlight on them. There's the covert narcissist, which the covert narcissist would be somebody that you would see oftentimes as a cult leader. They can come across, there's an altruistic narcissist, there's a cerebral narcissist, and these are the ones that just think they're smarter than everybody in the room. So it's a little bit like the virus, how the virus kept morphing into the next definition of self, that narcissism has done that over the years. And now there's six or seven different types of recognized narcissism out there, and each one, you know, is a different wolf in sheep's clothing. You just have to learn to recognize the signs of it so that you can learn to protect yourself.
Wow. I was, listening to that. That's amazing. And I'm sure you've been a pathfinder in exposing these different categories of someone being a narcissist. And wow, I was just going through things in my mind of circumstances as you were recounting these things one after the other. Dr. Tracy's website is www.drtracy.tv. Stay on the show. Don't go there right away. Listen to the rest of the radio show. Her website again is drtracy.tv. So that makes a lot of sense that there would be these layers or categories, and you so profoundly put them out there. Wow, what do we do with people who are narcissistic, or maybe do we just stay away from them, or, you know, we have to deal with them in society? What do we do?
You know, the difficult thing is, you know, in the past when we thought about narcissistic abuse or people with narcissism, we always thought about it in a couple situations, but as I said, it's reaching pandemic levels, and so you can have, you know, a parent that's a narcissist, you can have a partner that's a narcissist, you can have somebody that you work with that's a narcissist, your child could be a narcissist. I mean, it's just all around you. So you know, I'm a firm believer that the path to any type of change, it always comes with awareness. And the reason that I wrote them, the reason that I wrote Narctionary was because, you know, my mother gave me a great piece of advice years ago, and she said, you know, when our pain doesn't have a name, it's like fighting a ghost, in that we can't grab a hold of it and break it or bend it or mend it in our life. But if it has a name, we can grab a hold of it, we can pull it into our life, we can mend it, we can heal it. Or if it doesn't best serve us, we can kick it out of our life, never to suffer from this ghost again. And so what I found in Narctionary is, or in the world of narcissism, is that it really, there are so many things that are painful within the world of narcissism that I never knew had a name. For example, gaslighting, or word salad, or, you know, the pink cloud syndrome, and all these things, they never had a name. And so because it didn't, I would continue to just spiral in these relationships. But once it had a name, and I was able to start identifying the characteristics of narcissistic behavior, it was then that I was able to say, and take my measures and being able to protect myself. First off, understanding the trauma wounds that came with this personality disorder, and then heal myself. And now, you know, living proactively in my life. Do we have to stay away from them? I think it's impossible to stay away from narcissists. You know, the old form of recovery was no contact, just absolutely no contact. And definitely if you're detoxing from a narcissist, no contact is highly recommended. But in certain cases, that's not possible. That it might be the parent of your child. It might be your parent. It might be somebody that you have to work with. And for that case, you need to understand what you're dealing with and how to hold on to yourself when the narcissist bites.
Well, I think that's wonderful advice. And again, yes, we have to deal with people in our family and people at in our places of employment and in society in general. But the key is, as you've found out through your hard work and through your experience of life, is if you can put a name on it, or you can understand that it's not your fault, that this is something that is a behavioral situation with somebody else, then I think an intelligent person can learn how to deal with it and how to deal with that person. Not get upset, go home and cry themselves to sleep when somebody's been beating them up, you know, and putting them down and different things. They can say, oh, that's their problem. And be able to stand up, I guess, to a narcissist or be tolerant, patient with them. Because I think that the one thing, just occurs to me now, is the one thing that they need cooperation. They need the victim to cooperate to be the victim. And if you're not, what do? You know, what happened to them? I know you have courses, you have Reclaiming Me, you have your Reclaiming Me workbook, you have the Feminine Boss Formula. I mean, you've done a lot of work in this, and again, for people who are in this situation, you would be the go-to person as far as I would be concerned. And a website is drtracy.tv. So I've really learned a lot tonight in the interview so far. I'm sure there's a lot more. How long have you been, an advocate or a teacher or a healer for people who've had this problem?
Oh, my goodness. I've been in the recovery industry, of course. I'm always the first person in my own petri dish. And so I've been on about a 30-year journey in working with myself, and then also, of course, with other people. But, you know, I want to, if it's okay, I want to explain to people a dynamic of why, what's behind a narcissist, and why they treat people the way that they do, and what is the end goal, and how we get stuck in this trap cycle, the narcissistic abuse cycle, because there is a very specific abuse cycle that happens. It's different than the abuse cycle, and it's called the narcissistic abuse cycle. But before I touch on that, there's something that, imagine that a narcissist is like a cell phone battery, that if it is not constantly getting charged, it begins to wither, they begin to wither away, and they start to feel weakened and depleted. And what a narcissist is at is something that is called narcissistic fuel. Mm-hmm. And what this fuel is, it is the reaction of people around them that makes them feel visible and powerful. And so what a narcissist will do is, it's a three-part cycle that, you know, the difficult thing is that when somebody falls in love with a narcissist, they feel it, they believe that they're falling in love, but what they're actually falling into is just to be a fuel source for that narcissist. And this is this trap that you end up with, because in the beginning of every narcissistic relationship, I call it like the dream girl or the dream boy stage, sometimes it's called the golden stage, whatnot. And what happens is that when a narcissist first sees their target, is how they're identified, is, and it's literally that, is that they see this person that possibly is very infectious and bright and full of love and empathy, and they say, wow, there's fuel for me. And so they become enamored with their target in the beginning, and they douse this person, it's called love bombing, and they douse this person it's false love, it's faux love and attention, and they make, it's called future faking, they create a future, and they really, it's no different than getting onboarded onto a cult. They make all these false promises of love and attention, and they put this person on a pedestal, and this person has existing wounds inside of them, and so it aligns with their wounds of, oh my gosh, you know, now somebody really loves me. And what happens is that this can last anywhere from a few weeks up to 2 years. And when the narcissist realizes that this person is simply human and they're not somebody who has been put on this earth to perpetually charge them, that in an instant they will switch gears and they will go from love and adoration to to despising the person. And so then it switches gears to the second phase of the narcissistic cycle, which is called the degradation stage. And this is when they just start to chip away at that person's self-esteem and dignity and rights and honor. And many people, this is the most dangerous stage of the cycle, because many times, and I'll just speak male and female, or the victim and the narcissist, the victim at this point, will get on this track to try to get the original love back. And every time they try, the narcissist will then come back with avoiding them. Yeah, more abuse. And it was the biggest, I didn't understand that the years that I spent crying, I was fueling the narcissist. I thought I was dealing with a normal person, that, you know, this is my partner, this is the person that claimed they loved me. And you would think that they would see my tears saying, your actions are hurting me, as like, oh my gosh, I need to have a wake up moment. But not the narcissist. The narcissist sees that as fuel, as it's a payoff. And so this is why the cycle can go on for years and years and years. And then the final cycle of the narcissist is called the discard. And that is literally, they can do quick discards within the relationship, where all of a sudden they'll just pull back and you know, that threat of abandonment. Or they will literally just one day walk out of your life and start up a whole new life with somebody else and never look back.
And have no remorse whatsoever. Just discard, right? As you said.
Correct. Wow. They don't really have remorse, because they're love handicapped and they lack empathy. So they cannot step in the shoes of another person.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We're talking to Dr. Tracy Kimball, who is a PhD and has written an amazing book on narcissism, and you've just got to run out and buy it. Her website is drtracy.tv. We'll be right back after this.
The Douglas James Cockrell website is where you can learn much more about this amazing man and his journey through a lifetime of spiritual prophecy. The book Secrets of Life answers questions everyone has about the physical versus the spiritual world, why you are here in the world right now, karma, psychic abilities, reincarnation, prayer, and much more about universal laws. This book is essential for those who really desire to follow the path of the divine to soul perfection. Douglas has been chosen to provide you with a keen insight into the purpose of life's journey. Best-selling author Robert Appel says, "The least you can expect from Dr. Cockrell's work is that it will change your life." Go to douglasjamescockrell.com and click on Shop for Secrets of Life and all of his books and learning materials.
We are talking to Dr. Tracy, who is in Greece at this moment in time, and it's in the wee hours of the morning, so we really appreciate you getting up to talk to us here in North America. Thank you very much for coming on the show, Doctor. A long time ago, a minister I met once said to me that after many years of conducting marriages, that he was of the opinion that women wanted to get a man to the altar so that they could alter him. And I was a young man. I was about 22 or 3 when he said that, and that kind of stuck in my brain. And I thought, you know, when people stick it out with their spouse who is a narcissist, do you think that's what they're trying to do? They're trying to make it right. They're trying to find ways and means to bring that love back in a life. And it doesn't sound to me like that's possible, or if it is, it's kind of remote. You know, would that be along the same lines that the women are really, really trying hard, and sometimes it's just, I guess you need to see somebody like yourself to give that wake-up call and say, listen, you're in trouble. This is not your fault. You're doing all these wonderful things to try to make this relationship work, but this person doesn't feel or sense like you think they do or like you thought they used to, and maybe what they did before was a pretense. Would that be fair?
Yeah, that borders up right against it. And I wouldn't say that they want to alter them. I would say that they want the original love that they were pitched. And so they're trying to get back to the original state that they had. You know, unlike when you're in a relationship with somebody who's struggling with alcohol, let's say, is that, you know, you try to rescue that person from their own choices. I think in the narcissistic abusive relationship is that we're trying to find that original love that, like I said, that we were pitched, that, you know, it's like, what happened to that place that we used to have that was so euphoric, it seemed so real? And so you begin to fight for that original love because that's, you know, at the end of the day, that's what we're all, you know, designed to have, is that interaction of love, but unfortunately it's faux love with a narcissistic relationship.
So when ladies come to see you, and taking the perspective of a man and a wife or a woman or partners, is it possible that there can be, first of all, the person's recovery is to get them back on their feet and to make it so their brain isn't mush. Is it possible that they can work out a relationship, or is it that they have to, with kid gloves, kind of change the relationship? And if it's possible to continue it, of course. So, you know, kind of looking for hope here, but go ahead.
It depends on how far up the scale is, up the spectrum is the narcissist, where the narcissist sits. If it's somebody who has narcissistic tendencies and they have those moments that they're able to look within themselves, it will never go away. Narcissism is not a curable disorder, so it will always rest in the background, and You know, it's like the 80-20 rule, that if you have somebody who's really working the program and in therapy, and you know, they're succeeding 80% of the time, but there's going to be those very self-serving, narcissistic moments where they lack empathy or their thinking is just polarized and etc. One of the things that I've noticed over the years is that when you're in the recovery zone, that you reach a point that you say, okay, so I've learned how to hold on to myself when this person behaves this way, and I understand that they have a condition, you know, it's not me, it's their condition. But is it enough? Is this really how we want to experience love along this journey? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a personal choice, but they are love handicapped people. And you have to accept that part of your recovery.
So somebody's always paying the price. And I know some people love the other person so much that they can't stand the pain of separation or divorce. And so they do their best. And again, they pay the price. If that person is further, I guess if they're at the bottom of the scale, it's tolerable, but as they go up that narcissistic ladder, it can be pretty tough. And
one of the interesting things about the condition is what we've discovered now is that, as I said, narcissism sits on the spectrum. And, you know, at the very far end, at the opposite end of narcissistic personality disorder is a condition now recognized as self-love deficiency disorder. And that's why, you know, when people come into recovery, yes, we're learning about narcissism. Yes, we're learning about the trauma that you've been through. But what I really focus on in helping people repair their life, it's the journey to self-love. Because where self-love is, narcissistic abuse cannot exist. Different energies.
That makes a lot of sense, you know. People, I think, generally have problems with self-love. You know, they're into depression, they're into guilt, they're into, you know, self-destruction, they're into other abuses, alcohol and drugs to help reduce the pain and things like that. That makes a heck of a lot of sense. So you're opening a door to self-love. That seems to me that would be like the, you know, the magic bullet, you know, the injection that would get that person who is broken, first of all, give them some direction, give them some insight, and then learn to forgive themselves, would they be? Or how do they, you know, approach that self-love? How do you help them approach that self-love?
Well, the way that I have it's a one-year curriculum, and we have weekly classes that take place in a live classroom. And the way that I structure the program is there's 6 modules in the program, and I explain that self-love looks like a boardwalk in that there are many planks that make the boardwalk strong. If we have just one plank in our foundation, that we're going to walk like a tightrope in life. But if the more planks that we have under our emotional legs, we're going to be able to dance and prance in life. And so every week when people come into the class, we're laying down a new plank in our self-love foundation. And for example, a plank of self-love is a non-negotiable. You know, do you know what your non-negotiables are? A ground zero, which means that we all have the right to have a base, a strong ground zero in our lives. Reciprocity is something that people who operate in self-love, that we go into a relationship and we understand that healthy relationships have a give and a take. The right to our first voice. I mean, all of these are the different planks that as we lay them down in our foundation of self-love, when we lay those down and we begin to raise our vibration as a human being, we then disalign ourselves with narcissistic abuse. It's something that our palate, our emotional palate cannot, it doesn't crave anymore, it doesn't try to fix anymore. And we're just able to enter into our being, which is the only life that we ever have control over anyway.
Well, I kind of teach from your fingertips back. You have complete control from your fingertips forward. You know, you kind of have influence, so that's about it. But that's very interesting.
Good
I mean,
point.
For the plankstone, I like that analogy. That's fantastic. It gives you a firm foundation. I guess one of those things just occurs to me to say that, okay, you can't yell at me anymore. You know, if you yell at me, I'm going to leave the room or something. Is it as simple and basic as that to start putting those planks down?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, it's, well, a narcissist can't stand being told what to do, it is telling somebody, it's either sending the message, telling somebody, though they might not respect it, and taking the measures, you know. It's not so much you can't yell at me anymore. It's setting the foundation that respect, I live with respect. Self-love is a place where there's respect, respect in the communication. And if I expose myself to another human being, there's going to be that, again, that reciprocity in that respect. I will not raise my voice at you. You will not raise your voice at me. If you raise your voice at me, I'm out. That's my non-negotiable.
Right. that to me, is that the place to start, you know? Okay, well, we have a caller standing by. The lady's been a friend of the show. She drops in. Okay, Carol, you're on the air. Carol's from Chicago. Go ahead.
Sorry. What I wanted to know is, are there more, what percentage of people are narcissists? And are there more males and females than are narcissists?
Hi, Carol. That's a really good question. Well, we don't really have a percentage of who is narcissism because, again, or who has the narcissism condition, because it's a spectrum disorder. So like I said, that, you know, on a bad day, my horns could come out, and if I'm, you know, running a big project, I could respond in a way that is perhaps lacking empathy towards another person. That doesn't make me a narcissist, but that means that I had at that moment a narcissistic response in life. So it's difficult to say how many. Are there more men who are narcissists than women? The answer to that would be yes, and that's simply because more men tend to have power, and just the way our culture is raised with the power between men and women, that it is found in more men. But there are also a lot of narcissistic women out there, and there are so many men who don't understand what they're dealing with, because when you think of narcissism, you don't expect, you know, the traditional definition and ideology of a woman to not have empathy and compassion. And so, but it's as equally traumatizing to a man as it is to a woman.
There you go, Carol.
And I have one more. Now, are you familiar with Quentin Crisp? He was the foremost, I would say, in England, he was, you could call him the pioneer of homosexuality. And he was a narcissist. But he had to, in my opinion, he had to be that way in order to survive. But not in the way that he was hurting somebody, because they always hurt him. Are you familiar with Quentin? He did the movie called Naked Civil Servant. I'm sorry.
Yes, right. I'm vaguely familiar in that one of my girlfriends is doing. She did a big research on him and wanted to do a story about his life, but I'm not educated enough to respond whether or not he had narcissism or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, listen, thank you, Carol. That's a couple of good questions. Really appreciate your participating in the show tonight. Dr. Tracy, is there more to that answer, or did I jump in too soon?
No. I just I think that I need to have the question more a little bit more clear. I heard about. Can you just repeat the question one more time?
What I was saying, getting to the fact that Quentin is the sister, And the question was, you know, if you were familiar with him, do you think he was? But since your aunt,
the thing about narcissism is that, you know, in order to get a proper diagnosis, you have to really sit and know the person, because again, it's on a spectrum disorder. So because I'm not overly familiar, I couldn't give a clear answer on that one.
Right.
And have you tried, having the not, doing meditation? Or breathing exercises or something. Have you ever tried that or considered that?
In my recovery program, when I believe it's our module 3, there is a condition that is specific to the trauma victim of narcissism. And most people have heard of PTSD, which happens after a traumatic event. When a person goes through narcissistic abuse, they have a condition that is called CPTSD. And there's a very specific recovery program, different than recovering from PTSD, that it's a little bit of a different avenue of recovery. And within that portion of our recovery program, I do have meditation as a method of healing.
As they participate in our search for the Noetic Sciences and understanding the human consciousness, which has been my life work. Dr. Tracy, we have a few minutes left to go. I promised this to keep you up for an hour this morning, and you're holding up pretty good for, I guess it must be coming up to 4 o'clock in the morning over there in lovely, wonderful, amazing Greece. Pardon?
So amazing Greece. We have not yet hit over to daylight savings, so we're going on. Let me see. We are, actually, it is going on 4 o'clock in the morning, yes.
Okay. Well, you're doing well. Very good. So in the few minutes that we have left, we'd like to you have these different empowerments and programs. Would you like to talk a little bit about how you, what you offer? How about that?
So first off, the book that I just published, my most recent book, is called The Narcissionary, and it is the Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Dictionary, because the world of its own has a language of its own.
Mm-hmm.
And through this book that I've been able to identify over 350 terms and words that deal with narcissism, narcissistic abuse trauma, narcissistic personality, as well as narcissistic recovery, the most important part of the journey. I've been in the recovery world for about 30 years, and I have an ongoing program. It's taught twice a week on the East Coast time and on the West Coast time. It's called Reclaiming Me, and it's the journey from narcissistic abuse trauma to self-love. And it's a year-long curriculum. It only costs $10 to attend the class per week. And there are 6 modules in the program, and it's a safe environment. It's actually an enjoyable environment. And when somebody goes through narcissistic trauma, you feel so isolated and alone, and you feel crazy, and you feel lost. And this is just a very safe community where you can get answers to the brain scramble that you have, and you can get tribe and community and, most important, healing from the trauma that you've experienced. And it's real. You know, the old saying, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never harm me. It's not true. Sticks and stones can break your bones, and narcissistic abuse can cause the final blows that can kill a self-esteem.
I'm sure. Well, I like the idea of the dictionary, because I've learned, as you recounted, the several terms that make perfect sense to me, the different types of narcissistic, I'll call it patterns, if you will, for my word. And we have another call on the line here before we let you go, if they're looking to ask a question. But to me, words are power. And in the world I live in, you know, if you say the right words, you reinforce yourself, and I would think that would be my talking to yourself, sort of in a self-therapeutic way, that would be putting down those planks to lay the foundation for self-love. I deserve a better life. I'm a good person, things like that. Of course, that's very simplistic, but it sounds to me like when somebody comes to you, first of all, you're an expert. Second of all, you have gone through the situation of being abused, unfortunately. And I always think that people can learn esoterically, but the most important way is exponentially. So you are hands-on, so to speak, and I guess that makes you, I don't say an expert or somebody who certainly would have be able to relate to people walking into a circumstance or situation and coming to your organization and saying, help me. So, Paul, do we have, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I built the entire program based literally on my recovery journey. From the very first, the very first class in the program is called, What Is This? And, because I walked into therapy and I'm like, well, what is wrong with me? And then when finally I started to get some answers, you have narcissism, what is this? What happened to me? That's the next module. And so I, because I went through it, I think that it empowers me more to be able to really have the empathy that a person who's been traumatized needs to be able to heal.
Mm-hmm. Well, nothing like going through it yourself and from the grassroots up, as you say. I just did listening to you recount the steps. It makes perfect sense to me. It's been an education for me tonight. When we've heard terms, a friend of mine, Jonathan Alderson, has been on the show about autistic children and exploring the myth of autism. Likewise, yourself. Has, not that he was autistic, but he has, from before university, he started being involved with children. And over the years, he has, defined, and by exploring the myths, he has uncovered the different procedures on how to relate to children. He's had some remarkable recoveries. But the one thing is that he cared and he had a process where, like yourself being a groundbreaker or a pathfinder, you have to go through it. You have to have hands-on. There's no other way as far as I'm concerned. That's what I learned, all the things I do was hands-on. And people came along and showed up in my life. I'm sure you've had some mentors in your life as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I didn't do it alone. I when the student is ready to teach or present itself, I have a strong, and the beautiful thing about narcissistic abuse recovery is that there are a lot of physical things you have to do, there's mental things you have to do, emotional things you have to do, but there's also a spiritual journey that you have to go through in order to really be able to cut those ties and heal the soul trauma that happens to you.
Well, is it kind of like moving out of codependency into being an individual, kind of, for those people who feel like they, they don't want to take that step and be alone? I'm pretty scary for people who have been in a codependency. I would kind of, just occurs to me that might be what it's like open the door, go outside, get in the light.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, the dynamic between a narcissist, the only relationships that can, are sustainable in a narcissistic relationship is a narcissist with a self-deprecate, which would be a codependent, or a narcissist with a narcissist. And the narcissist with the narcissist, those relationships normally burn out because everybody's fighting for the mirror. But the narcissist and the self-deprecate, as you begin to heal that internal self-worth and visibility and value, and you raise that energetic level, that it breaks the co-addiction that the two sides of the coin keep each other attracted to each other. I always say that self-love is the only antidote to narcissistic abuse trauma. And the same with codependence, is that when you heal, the self-love you can heal the cycle.
Well, we have a couple of callers here. If you feel like staying up just a little bit longer,
sure.
If you don't mind, we might take a couple of questions. Okay, Paul, who's next?
We've got Joe on the line from Montana.
Okay, welcome to the show, Joe. You have a question for Dr. Tracy.
I do. I wasn't listening to the show, but I took a look at your description page, and as I was telling the screener, it says there that she has the only cure for narcissistic abuse. So I'd like to know, in a nutshell, what that is, because there are a number of relationship counselors, one in particular, who have Blog Talk shows, and they say they can cure narcissistic abuse. So I'd like to know what the...
Okay, Joe, because I'm an editor and a publisher, I'm going to take the word only back and might have said something about perhaps one of the many.
Maybe I misread it, but let me check.
It says right there. It says lead people to the only cure. I'm going to take that back and say whoever wrote that, you know, a little bit too much. I would have said it was me. It would be something like one of the, okay?
One of the few. Okay, no problem.
We can't. So what's your question for the good doctor?
Well, okay, in a nutshell again, what the cure would be according to her philosophy or process.
Yeah, so I don't know if you were, I don't know if you were on at the beginning of the show, but I was explaining how narcissism is on a spectrum disorder. And, you know, we all need healthy narcissism in order to keep the good in and the bad out. And as narcissism goes on up the spectrum, it first goes into narcissistic tendencies, and then it merges on up to narcissistic personality disorder, then it merges on up to antisocial personality disorder, known as sociopath and psychopath. On the opposite end of the spectrum is something that is called self-love deficiency disorder. And what I discovered within myself is I said one day, you know, if I stop focusing on trying to fix or cure the narcissist, and I just looked at this thing called self-love deficiency disorder, and I just focus on healing that self-love deficiency disorder within myself, what would happen? And inevitably I found that the more that I focus on repairing that self-love within myself, it disaligned me from the same, disaligned me from narcissism, and it broke all the cycles that were keeping that co-addictive relationship alive.
I have to agree that self-love, but what about the people who can't focus on themselves, that they're so traumatized that they can't rehabilitate themselves, and they're always in a cycle of being traumatized, because people have always said, and I've always said, you know, self-love would be the answer to just about anything. If you have self-respect, good self-worth, then you're really not going to sit around for anything, regardless of whether it's a relationship or bad colleagues or a bad boss. Because I myself, I don't have a lot of patience with people in a relationship that have, that display distinct uncooperative behavior. If we talk, we come to an agreement, or if we talk and can't come to an agreement, and the particular behavior continues, it's just a matter of hasta la vista, baby. To me,
Yeah. Bye-bye. This is a very common dynamic that my husband is a very type A personality. He says, I could never do what you do, Tracy, because if somebody came to me with the same problem three times, I'd be like, I'm out. You know, book it yourself fixed. The thing about self-love is that self-love is an emotional muscle. And when you're talking about somebody who has never been raised in an environment where they have taught what self-love is, it's like speaking Chinese to them. So it's literally coming in and learning a whole new language. What does this language look, feel, and sound like? It's a muscle. How do I use this muscle? you know, how do I strengthen this muscle? And it's a process that when I take my clients through it, that you start from ground zero. What are we talking about with self-love? What does it look, feel, and sound like? How do we use this muscle? How do we continue to grow this muscle and make it the foundation of our life? You know, one of my non-negotiables in life is self-love is a non-negotiable. And in order for a person to heal, they have to commit to that self-commitment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Next, how's that, Joe?
Well, it sounds like something. Well, yeah, I like that. I'm not in the health field, the relationship field, but I have talked to people over the years about relationships, and I've recommended boundaries as one way. I tell people I do not have the recipe for a long-lasting, healthy relationship, but I do have the recipe for not staying in a bad one. And boundaries is one of them.
And that's self-love. That is one of the planks in the foundation of self-love is a boundary.
Yeah, and if you can burst through the trauma that people do have, a lot of times people have trauma and don't even realize that they have it because everything else is their fault, but never her fault or his fault. It's always their fault. So if they can find out and take responsibility for their own actions and without exacerbating the trauma, then I guess it would be on their way to self-love, self-respect, realizing the world isn't as dangerous as it may appear, and maybe be open to a healthy relationship. I would like that too.
Yeah, and this is where the outside, getting outside of yourself is really important. This is where, you know, seeking counseling, one-to-one counseling, joining a support group where you can hear a new language, you can hear a new insight, you can see other people making steps in front of you that can kind of give you an example of what those bridge points in recovery look like.
Mm-hmm. Would the trust factor be the major goal, you know, for people who suffer trauma, who have been narcissistically abused, for them to trust the outside world? I would imagine that would be the very, very hard goal to accomplish, because it seems to me that a lot of people, even if you give them love, they're always expecting the other shoe to drop, so they sabotage it.
Yeah, well, that's where, you know, self-trust is another plank in the foundation of self-love. You have to trust yourself. You have to trust your emotions. You have to trust your thoughts. You have to trust your decision-making skills. And again, that's why I go back to it's a muscle that you have to learn. And when you learn to start self-trusting, you can then trust yourself to say, you know, this is a safe person to be with. Or if I'm with this person and suddenly I'm discovering that they have unhealthy skill sets, I'm out. You know, and that all comes down to self-trust.
I have a recommendation. Again, I'm not in the health field, but I'd like to have your opinion on it. I have been in many conversations, as I said before, about relationships, and I've recommended once you think that you are, that you really want that other person to be in a relationship with, take out a piece of paper. Write down what you like about each other, what you dislike. Write down situations and scenarios that you think you might encounter, you know, in the future relationship to see how you would handle it. And to do that so that you can agree on what the boundaries are, on what the behavior patterns would be. And I recommend that because, to me, again, if a person agrees to something, but then doesn't do it, you know, to me, I give a person four strikes. There's three strikes you're out in baseball, four strikes you're out with me. So, I recommend that. But again, I'm not on the health field. It's just somebody who's, lived life.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Joe. And, you know, I appreciate your comment. We're keeping the good doctor up, in the wee early hours in Greece. So, she's just doing a little overtime. We have one more caller, I think, to take, and we'll let her go. So thanks for your comments today, Joe. Appreciate that.
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay. Take care. And this is Joe from Montana. Paul, we have one last caller, and we have several people in the queue just listening. You're a fascinating interview, Dr. Tracy, here. People.
Okay, so I can take as many questions as you like, if obviously you have the time. And just a really quick thing is that the book Narcissary is located on Amazon if people are wondering where to get the book.
That's a good idea. I never thought about that. Well, again, I want to thank you very much, Dr. Tracy, for staying up in the wee hours and calling, talking to us all the way from Greece. We've had some interesting questions tonight. I've learned a lot. I really like the idea of that recovery dictionary. It makes sense to me personally that I can, understand people where before I would say, why would they do that? Why would they say that? Why would they think that? Why does somebody think they're so, the smartest person in the room? And all those questions that would kind of throw me off balance. But I think if people were to buy your book, and they can get it on Amazon, you said, and I can go, can they get it to your website? Do you do autograph on the book?
I should come out for a book signing one of these times. It is available on Amazon.com. And that's the best and the easiest way to get it. It can ship actually worldwide in many places.
Dr. Tracy, it's been a pleasure. I want everybody to go to Dr. Tracy's website, www.drtracy.tv. You will be very impressed. And if you're in need, if you feel that you're being abused by someone who has or is a narcissistic abuser, this is the place to go. I don't know of anybody else, Doctor, that actually provides such a service. And you've been doing this for a long time.
A long time. And all first-time guests are my guests for the class. You can get a complimentary class to come check us out, see who we are, see our methodology of healing, which is all about the journey to self-love. And we're waiting for you. If you need that tribe, that support, those answers, to, if your brain's feeling discombobulated, we can bring clarity. We can bring name to the ghost of narcissistic abuse.
Well said. I'm Douglas James Cottrell. My special guest has been Dr. Tracy Kimball. Take care and God bless.
Thank you very much for listening to Wake Up. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe so you'll be notified when a new episode is posted. And we'd greatly appreciate your review of our show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts to let others know about the great content we're producing. For more about Dr. Douglas's self-development classes, books, and other related products, please visit his website, douglasjamescartrell.com. Until next time, we wish you all of God's blessings, health, wealth, and peace of mind.